right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and now shifting our attention over to the energy sector. I hope you all enjoyed those first couple segments. Again, focus very much on the metals. Now it's energy time as we're chatting with Joseph Schachter. Joseph is the founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes the Ion Energy Report, which is a free report. The Schachter Energy Report is where Joseph hosts quarterly webinars with his subscribers and also dives very much into specific companies and reports on those, including analyzing some of the earnings, which we will have coming out in under a month's time. Joseph, let's start with a quick comment on the overall energy prices, starting with oil. Last time we chatted was at the tail end of December, and after we chatted, actually the oil price almost went straight up for almost a month, reaching a high of just under $80 a barrel as we're recording this halfway through the week. Oil has corrected back down to about $75 a barrel, but that was a strong 3 to 4 week run. Joseph, take us through what happened with that oil price and the strength that just all of a sudden came into the market.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, President Biden always wanted lower prices, so he sold the oil from the Strategic Reserve, and you know, he didn't do anything really sanctioning on Iran or Venezuela. He even allowed it, Venezuela, through Chevron to produce oil. Chevron provided the diluent, and then they were moving 200,000 barrels a day into the States for the Gulf Coast refineries. And then as his term ended, he said, oh, okay, now let's make things difficult, raise the price of oil for my successor. So he put in the tanker fleet, the Black Fleet, as Russia, you know, has for shipping to load in Russia and then, you know, go change their transponders once they're at sea and then move the oil to India or China, you know, and, you know, about 2.5 million barrels a day goes to India, 1.6 million to India, sorry, to China, the bigger number, and then 1.6 million to India. And so you had a push up in the price of crude from under $70 to, as you said, just under $80. And we've given back $4 of that now that it's clear that Russia's already finding ways around the sanctions, as they always seem to do. And we're also now, you know, wondering what the tariffs are going to do. Germany announced recently disappointing economic data. They're in a recession. Modest, but a recession. And we're seeing from the U.S. data, you know, inventory builds, as we saw with the data last week. The rest of the data will come out tomorrow, Thursday morning, because of the holiday on Monday, Martin Luther King statutory holiday. So the EIA will report both the natural gas and oil data tomorrow. And I'll have that in my report next week in Ion Energy. So anybody who wants to get a macro update on what's going on with OPEC, U.S. data, geopolitical stuff, and then just general comments that I have on the oil markets and the market impact of it. The Ion Energy is a great free product. So people just go to our website, www.schachterenergyreport.ca, and under subscriptions, they can find the Ion Energy, which is the free macro report.
Well, I recommend our listeners do that. You cram a lot of good information in there, Joseph. And I want to dive in a little bit more. We've talked a little bit about this in the past on what the Trump administration policies around deregulation could mean for the oil patch, what it means for global trade. You brought up tariffs there, but also the idea, the infamous drill baby drill. There's a big push that he wants to open up more drilling and even signed some executive orders the first day in office, the Trump administration. But oil companies themselves maybe don't see the incentive to drill baby drill unless there's higher prices. So maybe talk about the disconnect between policymakers and the oil companies.
Yeah, first thing, you know, the Baker Hughes weekly data that comes out on Fridays, which we cover, as I said, in Ion Energy, is showing that the total rig count for the U.S. is down 6.5% from a year ago, 620 rigs working this year, 580. And of that, 98 of those are working for natural gas, down from 120, and 478 are drilling for oil, down for 497. And so the industry is using the discipline of rates of return, tier one inventories being drilled to replace declines. Wells are longer reach, you know, they're going farther and farther. The completion techniques are getting better and better. So we're not seeing much down that 13.5, 13.6 million barrels a day of crude oil. And then remember, there's over 9 million barrels of natural gas liquids on top of that. So the US is still, 22 million barrels or so production, and demand is 20. So they are fully self-sufficient now. And what what Trump is going to do is federal lands that Biden had said were not going to be allowed to be drilled in New Mexico, which is the extension of the Permian, and then offshore Gulf of America now. There's lots of federal lands there. And as you may have seen from the interview with the press that Trump had in the Oval Office, he said Anwar in one of his on one of the forms that he signed, executive orders, he opened up Alaska and Anwar. And so there's a lot of tier one inventory. Alaska is going to take longer because you need the right kind of ships, the drilling equipment, and winter, you need to have the ground the right way, and the timing of getting everything organized takes longer. Gulf of Mexico or Gulf of America now will just take as long as it's offshore. But getting the access to the lands and the company signing up to get those leases just opens the door. And then, maybe late this year, next year, we start seeing some action on the drill side. In terms of New Mexico and other federal lands onshore, that's something that could happen in the next few months. And we could see some activity fairly quickly, especially because companies have done a lot of the seismic already. So they know which are the lands that are the most attractive. And so once they get them, and if they get sufficient, acreage where they can do the longer reach horizontals, then we should see some activity on tier one lands in New Mexico and other federal lands in other jurisdictions, which would probably mean an uptick. I don't believe, the 13.5, 13.6 is going to be exceeded until Q4, maybe down up to 13.7, 13.8. But in 2026, I think there's a possibility of 500,000 to 1 million barrels of new production. And then each year thereafter, maybe 1 million. And that 3 million barrels before the end of the decade, I think, is not out of the picture in terms of incremental production. And that's on the crude oil side. Then you have to add in that, natural gas liquids come as well. So overall, you could see the United States go from 22 million to 26 to 27. And if it's still demand only 20 or 21, then they will have an export juggernaut. And that's why you hear Trump talking about telling Europe, hey, if you want to get rid of your budget, your trade deficit with us, buy our oil, buy our natural gas. And, likely the US will have that production available. Just one thing on natural gas, European prices have gone up sharply recently because of the cold weather. And we've seen six cargoes that were heading towards Asia reverse and go to Europe because of the sharp decline in storage and very strong demand because of the cold weather.
I find this so interesting because, yes, companies aren't going to necessarily run out and just drill more because Trump wants them to. But this whole opening up of other land, federal land, that sounds like it's low-hanging fruit where companies can move in there. And even with these generally low rig counts, production in the US is still quite stable at very high levels. So there's definitely this push and pull, but it does seem like that low-hanging fruit is these federal lands that Trump could open up and companies could move into right away. On the back of what else Trump could do, though, how could Canada be impacted by tariffs that Trump could put on Canadian natural gas or oil production?
Well, that's where I think Canada is going to have to, argue the point that there is a lot of benefit for the United States taking our heavy crude to their refineries in the Midwest and also in the Gulf of America. Again, have to get used to saying that more. And the key is we have a problem with immigration coming in from both East Coast and West Coast going into the states, and so we need to tighten up our and not allow, migration to occur at the levels we have. We still are part of the fentanyl crisis, but other drugs are going in through the Canadian ports, be it Montreal or be it Vancouver, into the United States, causing problems for the Americans and about 500,000 deaths of young people because of the fentanyl crisis. So we could do things that way. The other one that's interesting is if we finally get the Americans to agree, yeah, we want to have a continental energy policy, Canada and the States, and Mexico's not really a big part of it, you know, because they're really not spending money drilling for oil onshore, offshore, but they could be part of it for, you know, pipelines and LNG exports from Mexico, in U.S. gas could go to those excess export markets. But if they want to have, you know, us develop more of our oil sands and our SAGD projects, we're going to need another pipeline south. And so a lot of the inputs for pipe, compressor stations, all the steel inputs, technology inputs, that could be where we save, things for our trade deficit, where we say, look, you know, we'll let American companies bid. And if their prices are within what the range is for Canadian companies, then they will have a good chance at getting, you know, some of the business. So that plus maybe some give and take on the auto industry. And because, you know, you look at the individual items that we have trade surplus, energy is a big component of it, but a lot of it is, and a lot of it's from Alberta and Saskatchewan, but there's also a lot from Quebec and Ontario because they sell electric power down to the northern U.S. states. So again, they don't want to black them out. So we're going to have to find other offsets. One of the ones you're hearing recently is about milk and eggs and other things that are being dumped. But I think in the eggs case, I think with the bird flu down in the States, they're going to want our eggs and our chicken. But on the case of, butter and milk, maybe the Canadian government is in the wrong with our production profiles for the industry. And maybe some of that will have to be part of the resolution. Even Australia complains about our dumping on them. Kind of impressive that Canada can be accused of dumping anything.
It's a wild situation with global trade, Joseph, but you brought up pipelines there, and I think that's an interesting topic. If we think back, the first day of the Biden administration, you know, he killed the Keystone Pipeline with an executive order. Now in this era of deregulation, do you think we'll see more pipelines? Because the U.S. still really needs Canadian heavy oil in the refineries to make diesel. The problem is diesel for trucking, but also how that could possibly tie into more pipelines for nat gas. Could you maybe speak to how infrastructure between Canada and the U.S. could create some opportunities for companies or even oil service companies?
Yeah, so if you listen to the announcements from Enbridge and TC Energy, they all can tweak and add, you know, 5-10% to their numbers with just adding compression, twinning some pipelines. But to really make a difference, it means new pipelines. And as you may have seen in the press today, one of the First Nations leaders in BC who was totally against the Northern Gateway pipeline said that we need to find more export capacity on the West Coast, and he reversed his opposition. So we're beginning to get more and more buy-in from the First Nations. The question is, what's going to happen with the BC government in favor of it? What happens federally? Do we have the Liberals in charge, or is it Poilievre and the Conservatives who are pro-growth to the energy industry? So there's a lot of wild cards in 2025. You know, will Trump say, hey, I want the XL pipeline? You know, we want to get that up and running again, and we want that process to move forward. Do we want to have, of course, he's removed any opposition to LNG new facilities. He reversed the Biden move there. So there's going to be a lot of movement here over time as Trump's policies get moved down and he gets his cabinet approved. So I think we're in interesting times here. And of course, Canada being a big part of it because of the continental policy of our energy industries, you know, because again, the U.S. sends oil and natural gas into eastern Canada. We sell into the Midwest. It really is a continental policy, and tariffs of 25% on it for our oil and our electricity just doesn't make any sense because all it does is drive up consumer prices in the States. And that's the reverse of what Trump's policies, you know, his election promises.
Let's talk some of the energy stocks then, because look, along with the stronger oil price, stronger natural gas price, a lot of the ETFs that I follow that hold the energy stocks, those have also done very well. Some not quite back to some of those highs that we saw back in November, but again, it's been a very strong rebound. I know you were waiting to issue a lot of buy signals at the end of tax loss selling, and I think you're even waiting for a slightly lower oil price. Where do we stand now, Joseph, and what's available and where the opportunities are for natural gas and oil stocks?
Okay, first, we said that we expected a very attractive buy signal, buy window during tax loss selling season. That did occur. We told our people to take advantage of it. We did ourselves. My wife and I added to our positions and nearly got us nearly fully weighted. But I thought we would see a bounce thereafter, which happened, and many stocks bounced 20% or more from the lows of tax loss selling season. And now I think we're going to see a pullback if we get oil down below 70 in the next few months because of fundamental reasons. And then I think that gives us another buy signal, maybe not as good as what we got during tax loss selling or during September when we had those, you know, when we sent out a lot of buy recommendations in September of 2024. But again, I think the next window for people to be putting any capital they want to put through the energy sector, I think that'll happen during Q1. We'll have, you know, we're going to be talking to you guys on a regular basis. So anytime we get under $70, people should be looking at the bargains out there and deciding which ones they want to have to add to current positions or to start new positions. Under $70, I think we're going to see some great opportunities, and we'll be highlighting those to our clients and in general terms in our commentary eye on energy.
Well, Joseph, if we look at the nat gas stocks, the gassers have really been performing, but maybe not as much as people expected, considering that nat gas prices on the futures are up near $4. But it's also a regional thing. There's parts of the U.S. and parts of Canada that have fluctuating nat gas prices based on their region. Any opportunities that you're seeing in the nat gas stocks?
Well, you know, they did get down quite a bit cheaper during tax loss selling in late November, December. They've bounced quite a bit since then. I think there's could potentially 5-10% back offs here in the coming couple of weeks. So I would, you know, find names that you like, do your homework on the names, and then be ready to take advantage if we do see sub $70 in the next few weeks. And I think that's going to be the approach I'm taking. And what I would think people are, if they took advantage of the September opportunity and then tax loss selling, they should be in the 80-90% weighting of what they want towards the energy sector. The next pullback should get them where they want to take whatever their position is, depending upon if they want to be market weight, if they want to be overweight or underweight. That's when we would think that they should allocate back into the sector. And again, the bargains are there in the oil side. The bargains are there. Well, were there in December and in September, both in oil, natural gas, and the service sector. And we expect, and even for some royalty income funds like a freehold. So there's opportunities here that people can take advantage of, when we see some weakness. And again, we're talking maybe 5% for some of the bigger cap names, maybe 10% for smaller companies. But if you can be nimble and take advantage of that over the next few weeks on a pullback below US $70 WTI, I think that would be my recommendation for those who are watching the markets and are more nimble.
Any dividend paying stocks or high dividend stocks that you have your eye on that you think not only offer that kind of cash flow, but also are solid companies that could offer some capital gains growth?
Sure. As I mentioned on the Royalty Trust freehold, which is yielding you an 8% dividend yield. On the natural gas side, Birchcliff is yielding 6.8%. Paramount Resources, 5.7%. You've got Whitecap at 7%. Veren, just around 6%. You've got Pinecliff, 6.4%. Surge Energy, 8.5%. Alvo Petro, 9.5%. Inplay Oil, 10%. So there's some very, very nice yields out there. And again, you know, if we do get a 5% correction, then those yields even get better. So, you know, being nimble and being able to, you know, make that decision. And I think the thing is, when should I be starting to watch for the bargains? My comment is watch for a breach of $70 WTI. And then I'd be looking to see which names fit your portfolio profile and risk tolerance, and then make your moves thereafter.
Well, Joseph, I want to circle back one more time to the gassers and compare U.S. versus Canadian. Where I was getting at on the last question is when I look at some of the U.S. producers like Antero or EQT, they've had huge runs for the last year or two and really participated in that gas price. But you brought up Birchcliff and Pinecliff there, both companies that have good exposure to the nat gas sector, and they haven't really ripped as high. So is there a arbitrage to play the Canadian companies that have more exposure to nat gas over the U.S. companies?
Yeah, I think you're looking at, 3.94 today for NYMEX US, and you're only getting $1.90 Canadian for AECO. So companies that are locked in with a lot of their production in the lower price Canadian market are not going to be, not going to have the cash flows that their American peers would have. But going into the middle part of this year, we're going to have LNG Canada come on, and I think we're going to be looking at, $2.50, $3 kind of range for the Canadian prices during the, summer and spring and fall. And then when you get into the winter of 2025, 26, I think we could be looking at $3, $4 numbers Canadian. And so that gives you a very attractive price for that. So we've been adding ourselves to the natural gas names because we, with dividend yields, because we just believe that if we get to that $3, $4 handle, these stocks potentially could be doubles over the next 12 to 18 months.
All right, Joseph, great having you on the show. Thanks for joining us on the KE Report weekend show. Again, Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, as well as writes the Ion Energy Report. You can find a link in the show notes to Joseph's website. And everyone, again, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast. Just search the KE Report in your podcast player to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates we release throughout the week. Joseph, again, thanks for taking time on this weekend show. And everyone, thanks for spending some of your weekend with us. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Cortland Economics Report is produced for A.B. Cortland and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Cortland, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Cortland Economics Report.